This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Joel Schweitzer, who's the executive director of the Hillel Foundation for Jewish Students on the U of I campus. Welcome, Joel.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
And there have been huge changes at Hillel this last year, and people can tell even who just walk or drive by the building, it disappeared.
Yes, we were thrilled that the wrecking balls finally flew over winter break last year, and we're looking forward to our move into our new home, the Margie K. and Lewis N. Cohen Center for Jewish Life, over winter break this coming year, or actually this year.
And when do you actually hope to move in? I know with construction, that's always a question.
Over winter break. We're looking forward to getting the spring semester started off in our new home.
Wow, how exciting. Now tell me about the Cohens, who provided all the money for this, or most of the money for this? Or?
Well, they made the estate of Margie and Lewis Cohen made the naming gift for the building, but of course, as the building campaign goes on, there are numerous other naming opportunities, but of course, the one for the for the building itself, for the actual center, was a pretty significant part of the puzzle.
And are you telling people what the total amount is you need to accomplish all this?
Sure. Well, you know, people don't often want to give to a campaign if they don't know what you're shooting for. We're looking to raise $8.6 million, of which $5.5 million, which is about what we've raised at this point, is for bricks and mortar and furniture and infrastructure. And the rest of it is to go into an endowment that will spin off funds to help underwrite the increased costs of running a much larger facility.
Now, does Hillel already have an endowment that this is an addition to, or is this the start of an endowment?
This is the start of one.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So all these years, you've just had to raise money each year for your expenses that year?
Sure. We've been fortunate for a number of years to be under the Hillels of Illinois, which is part of the Jewish Federation of Metropolitan Chicago. So we do get about half of our budget from the Jewish Federation of Chicago, and then we also get a nice allocation every year from the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation in addition.
And in addition to that, there are private and donations also from individual congregations?
A few from congregations. We get a small amount of money from congregations. We get funding from parents, from alumni. Of course, a big part of my role is raising the dollars to keep the program going. We actually have in addition to a board that's very active and involved with fundraising, we have a development professional who's based out of the Chicago area. So the two of us kind of team up to partner with our lay people to raise those funds.
Now, tell us about this building. Why was it needed?
Well, it was very fitting that the day that we voted to do a teardown and rather than a remodel, it was a very stormy day, and we had problems finding a space in the building to actually have the vote because it was so the rain was coming down so hard that it was actually flooding much of the building. And so the library, which is where we were to have the meeting, was completely unusable. The basement was about 90% unusable, and other spaces it was difficult to find as well. So part of the reason for the new building is simply the old one was not in shape where just a remodel could have gotten us to where we need to be.
So it was very obvious that day that how bad things were.
Absolutely. But I think the other important point is that Hillel itself has moved away from how it was originally conceived, incidentally, right here on this campus, as I hope many of our listeners and the community knows. Hillel as a movement was founded right here in Champaign-Urbana, and in fact for a number of years the national offices were housed right out of that same building on John Street that we tore down last year.
So the very first Hillel Foundation anywhere was on this campus, and now they're where around the world? How many?
there are foundations at every major campus in the United States, with the notable exception of Yeshiva University. But since the president of Yeshiva is a former president of Hillel, hopefully that's something that'll change eventually. And then there are also Hillel foundations at universities in Israel, and also in the former Soviet Union, and now in South America has been an area where they've really been growing over the last decade. But Hillel itself has really changed. When the building was designed in 1950, the main function of a Hillel was to be the synagogue on campus, and that's where you went for high holiday services or Friday night Shabbat services and dinner. And we certainly still have those functions and will continue to. But for not every student is that what's going to draw them to Hillel. I know, just speaking from my own experience, when I was a student on campus, the high holidays were a time where I tried to get as far away from Hillel as possible. And those are the students we're trying to reach too, not just the ones that are going to be there because that's where they can observe the holidays, but the ones that may not know how they want to connect Jewishly. But if we have an engaging enough facility, one that meets them where they're at in terms of what's exciting to them, then we can have that opportunity to engage them Jewishly as well and to have that conversation with them.
So when the high holidays come around, like the Jewish New Year, some students are drawn to celebrate with other Jewish students on campus. Others, I presume, might go home for their families.
Sure.
But others, as you say, are at that place in life where they may not choose to be involved at all. And yet Hillel tries to reach out to them in other ways.
Correct. And so we try to be where they are, where the students are at physically, whether that's on the quad or in the fraternity and sorority houses or in the residence halls. But we also try to make sure that our program is diverse. I like to say that we can't be all things to all people, but we can be as many things to as many different people as possible. And so for some students, it's our a cappella group, and that's a way for them to get involved. We're entering, I believe, our third year of Highway 57, which is our a cappella group directed by Melissa Cohen. We have
any relation to the Cohen family who gave the money for the building?
No relation, but she's thrilled to have her name on the building nonetheless. we have our Trailblazers, which is our outdoors group, and a lot of people, especially students that go to Israel, we found they get very excited about doing things in the outdoors, whether it's camping or rock climbing or canoeing. And so having an outdoors group is a way for them to continue that connection with the peers that they went to Israel with for many of them. And so in this way, we really try to be as diverse in how we deliver service to students as possible, to increase the likelihood that something's going to get them jazzed and get us either through our door or to a program we have on campus.
Now, your earliest building was noted architecturally, and I'm sure many people who were active in that building over the years feel a loss of that. Was this decision to tear it down and start over controversial?
Not as controversial as I expected it to be. There are certainly people who have a soft spot in their heart for the old building, and I think we're fortunate that it was not the only Max Abramovitz building on campus. There are other places where people can go right here in Champaign-Urbana to view his architecture, most notably, of course, the Krannert Center. But the reality is when we voted, it wasn't just should we tear down the building or not. It's should we tear down the building or do we think that we can remodel this building in a way that it can meet our needs today, but still have the basic but still be built from this old building. And I think that Mark Amstetter, the architect who designed our new facility, did an admirable job of in a way paying homage to the original building. I think the big curve of the main wall as you walk by the building, I think, reminds me, and I've had several people remark to me as well, of the curve of the building where the synagogue was in the previous version.
Now, will this, does the current building in its plan also have a synagogue?
There's no fixed seating in the new building. The old building had a had a synagogue with pews in it, and that room was never going to be anything but a synagogue with pews in it. So we have sufficient space for all of our groups to meet and even to grow. That's so every week currently we have Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox Friday night services, and throughout the week we may have other services here and there as well. And there's adequate room for those minions to meet at their current level and still have room for growth. But there's also the opportunity to use those spaces for other things. So our, for example, and I direct listeners, if they're in front of a computer, to our website at www.IlliniHillel.org. And if you look in the upper left-hand side of the main page, you'll see a picture of the new building. And if you click on that, you'll go to an article that has a couple of more pictures. So one of those pictures is of the layout of the first floor, and there's also a picture of the second floor. So looking at the first floor in the multipurpose room, for instance, which is where the Reform Minion will, would meet on a Friday night, there's a collapsible partition, and when opened up, that that room can be a huge banquet hall. Like I know that the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation is very much looking forward to being able to have their annual dinner in that space. In the past, they've had to rent out other space. We're thrilled that we'll be able to have them right in our facility. There will also be a rather large drop-down movie screen in there, so we could actually have we could actually show movies in there, but it'll also be tied into the satellite TV system. So if we wanted to watch a Bears game when they make it to the Super Bowl again next year, or an Illini game, or a presidential debate, we'll be able to show all those things on a large 20-foot screen.
Our guest on Keeping the Faith today is Joel Schweitzer, who's the executive director of the Hillel Foundation on campus. We're talking about their new building and other ways that they're re-engineering Hillel for the 21st century. We encourage listeners to call in with comments or questions. The number in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. So if it's a long-distance call, for example, if you're listening outside the Champaign-Urbana area or even on the Internet fairly far away, if you're in the continental U.S., use the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Joe, you've used a word or two that some of our non-Jewish listeners may wonder what you mean. What is a minion?
Sure. A minion is a group of at least 10, for Orthodox Jews, at least 10 men. For conservative or reform, it could be 10 people of either gender. And it's the minimum number required for a service. So if I refer to a Shabbat minion, it's either a Friday night or a Saturday day religious service. And you might, and sometimes we would refer to the group as the minion.
Now, what happens if you don't get the minimum minion?
There are parts of the service that require a minion to be said, and again, it depends on which stream you're dealing with. But just by way of example, our Friday night services begin at 6:30. This week, I think because of the rain, we didn't have 10. We didn't have 10 in the Orthodox minion until a couple of minutes after 7. And so there was some discussion about if we didn't get up to that magic number of 10, how would we deal with it? And people were preparing to say the evening prayers on their own, since it didn't look like a group was going to come together. There's also frequently there are people who make themselves available to be recruited for the Orthodox Minyan, so that even if their preference might be to be in the Conservative or Reform Minyans, they're community-minded and are willing to be recruited, so that so that the people that need that 10 in order to satisfy their own Shabbat needs can do so.
Now, tell us about Shabbat.
Sure. Well, Shabbat is the Jewish Sabbath, and for our students, it's a very exciting time because it's the culmination of a week for what I know for many of our students is a very difficult week of classes and study and all this. So Hillel, we kind of give them a chance to recharge their batteries, and we, in addition to services afterwards, there's a celebratory Shabbat dinner. We typically have anywhere from about 75 to 120 students on an average week. We're fortunate in the first week of school. We shrunk a little bit because of our temporary situation this year, but we've had in the past between 250 and 300 for our first Shabbat dinner of the year. So we have after services, the students come together and we say a prayer over the wine. We say a prayer or grape juice. Currently in Allen Hall, where our Shabbat dinners are, we say the blessing over the bread. We have the opportunity to be together, and it's just for many students, there are many students who don't even come to services who join us for dinner, and there are also students who come to services that go and do other things for dinner as well. And then afterwards, students will sometimes stay around until 10, 11 midnight, playing board games, singing, doing Jewish study, all kinds of things. It really never ceases to amaze me. I will frequently, because I have two small children, I'll frequently leave by 10 o'clock on a Friday night, and it always astounds me when I see 40 students still having a good time together when they could be doing any number of other things, good, bad, or otherwise, in the community.
Tell us about the food. You mentioned being in Allen Hall during this interim period while you're without a building to have the Sabbath services on that include a dinner. How was that difficult to arrange? What do you do about kosher?
Well, we were very fortunate that this past spring semester, the university dining services under the supervision of Rabbi Tachtel of the Chabad Jewish Center began offering kosher meals through Allen Hall. Last semester, it was every other Wednesday night. This semester, it's every Wednesday night, and then they've also been able to accommodate us for our Friday night meals. And I think if it weren't for that beginning last semester of starting to serve those kosher meals, I think we would have been hard pressed to discover a workable solution if we wanted to continue having large communal Shabbat dinners. So it was really a fortuitous series of events, and I think it's wonderful that the university is committed to trying to make kosher food an option for students, because it's something we hear in conversations with the observant community in Chicago all the time. I'll hear literally dozens of times a semester, "Oh, I wish I could send my kid to Illinois. It's such a great school, but I'm going to have to buy all these meals that my child can't eat because we have to get a university meal plan." But that's changing, and I think the university is being very sensitive to how to make that change. And Rabbi Tachtel has been very active also in helping them to do it in a way that will meet any student's needs for kosher food.
How do the kosher food rules, laws, practices compare with what Muslim students Do you happen to know?
I'm certainly not an expert, but I will say that I have noticed on the at the Wednesday night meals, there are Muslim students who go through the line and will eat the food that's prepared there. I also know there are other campuses, for example, Michigan and I believe Maryland, where it's even billed as a kosher halal food option, and they get people from both the Jewish and Muslim communities.
We're talking with the director of the Hillel Foundation at the University of Illinois, Joel Schweitzer, about some of the new reengineering of Hillel for the 21st century, including a brand new building. And Joel has told listeners who are near computers that they can see pictures of it, the floor plan, as well as some of the exterior renderings, as
Absolutely.
The architects call it, at IlliniHillel.org. And if you'd like to call with a comment or question for our guest today, do call 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. Let me ask a little bit about, you mentioned Rabbi Dovid Tachtel, who was a guest here a couple weeks ago on Keeping the Faith. There are how many rabbis in the Champaign-Urbana community at this point?
So in addition to Rabbi Tachtel, we have Rabbi Gabe Pransky, who's the Hillel rabbi, who has just come in literally a week ago, replacing Rabbi Falk, who was with us for the previous 3 years. There's Rabbi Klein out at Sinai Temple, and there's also Rabbi Newman, who's Rabbi Emeritus at Sinai.
And are three active rabbis, maybe a Rabbi Emeritus continues to be active, I don't know, but are three younger rabbis enough for the Jewish population here? I know it's huge if you count all the Jewish students on campus.
I would love to see more diversity in rabbis. We've been fortunate to be able to partner with some of the congregations to bring people down. We also have a rabbi who comes down every other week from Chicago, Rabbi Zev Drutman, who's with Yeshiva Migdal Torah in Chicago. But I would love to see more regular representation from some of the other movements, and this is actually something I've had discussions with a representative from Koach, which is the conservative movement's college outreach program, as well as Kesher, which is the reform movement's college outreach program. I think it's a very positive thing for students to see female rabbis, for instance, which of course there aren't any in the Orthodox, in the Orthodox stream. It's also helpful for people to get the opportunity to have their own congregational rabbi come down. I think that's very meaningful. We've also had we've been fortunate enough for some of the rabbis from the Jewish summer camps to come down from time to time.
Now, how does the director of the Hillel Foundation relate to a rabbi who's also connected to the foundation?
Well, it's an interesting relationship. We're actually part of a program through the Orthodox Union called the Jewish Learning Initiative, and that's the program that's brought first Rabbi Falk and his wife Rachel, and now Rabbi Pransky and his wife Shira. The Jewish Learning Initiative was a program founded about 13, 14 years ago, and its goal is to help Hillel's enhance their Jewish educational components. So they've come to do Shabbat day programming, to do holiday classes and programming, but I think most importantly, to do one-on-one and small group learning with students.
And is Rabbi Pransky at Hillel Orthodox?
He is. It's okay. Through the Orthodox Union, so it's.
But he also will work with conservative students, Reform students.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, they work with everyone across the spectrum.
And Rabbi Klein, I know, is himself, is it conservative or reformed?
He's a Reform rabbi.
Reform. Mm-hmm. But he also has members of that congregation who are conservative, and I don't know about Orthodox.
Even Orthodox, absolutely. Even Orthodox. And one thing I love about this community, actually, even before I met my wife and had kids, I said, you know, I don't want to raise children that think that everyone is Jewish in the same way. Until I got to the point where I was working in the Jewish community, I always thought, well, I was raised in the Reform movement, and everyone kind of sees their Judaism in the same way. After working in the Jewish community, I very quickly realized, well, that's not the case. Sure, there are some people who will drive to synagogue on Saturday, or maybe not even go to synagogue at all because they are because they're doing other things. But there are also people who will walk and who will keep kosher and every point in the spectrum in between. And so once I realized and began to appreciate this diversity, I really took it upon myself to want to find someone with whom to raise a family that we didn't have a one-size-fits-all approach to Judaism, and that they could see and that our kids could see the different aspects. And I think with both Sinai and Hillel, here in this little, relatively small community of 1,000 Jews plus 3,500 students, they have that. And they have that whether they go to Hillel and they walk between the Orthodox minyan, where men and women are separated, to the conservative minyan and on into the Reform minyan, where they'll dance to the guitar. But they also have this at Sinai, where they can go and where they can go and they can visit with the teachers of the different classes in the religious schools, where you may have some that are classic Reform all the way to teachers that wear tzitzit and keep strictly kosher. And I think it's a wonderful thing for me to know that my own children can be raised having that exposure to different perspectives on Judaism. But I think it's also a wonderful thing for the community's children having the opportunity to be exposed to those different Jewish perspectives.
Say more about wearing tzitzit.
Thank you. So tzitzit are the fringes that you'll see many Orthodox people wear. You might see people walking down the street with a yarmulke, a kippah on their head, and you might sometimes notice some of these people will have what look like strings dangling from down below their shirts. And so the tzitzit, they're representative of the 613 commandments in the Torah.
And these would be males who'd be wearing both those. Yes. Are there distinctive clothing that Orthodox Jewish women wear?
I would say not really my area of expertise.
Okay. I know when my wife and I traveled in Israel earlier this summer in Palestine, we noticed that that when we would go into certain Orthodox holy places, I'm not sure what to call them, but that you're expected to cover your shoulders and arms.
Sure.
More modest dress at the Wailing Wall, for example. Is that typical?
Absolutely. You would see women wearing long skirts. In fact, when we take students to Israel, we suggest that the women bring a skirt that they can just throw into their backpack. And so on any given day, if we're somewhere where more modest dress is the norm, then they can be prepared for that.
We're about halfway through our program with Joel Schweitzer, the director of Hillel Foundation here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. We're talking about the new building that Hillel is putting up right now as we speak on the corner of 5th and John Street, right in the heart of the campus where they've been located since when? 1950, you said? The other building was...
Correct.
...was built. When did Hillel actually begin on campus?
We began in 1923. And the original location was in a rented space above a barber shop over on Green Street. Right. So we've certainly come a long way since then.
I want to get back to talking with Joel about Hillel, but let me take just a minute to let guests, listeners know who our guests are going to be on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. We're doing sort of a mini-series on Judaism, and next week, Rafe Melhado and his new spouse, Jessica Kavanaugh, will be our guest, talking about their year of Jewish studies recently in Israel. On September 23rd, our guests will be Lynn Jones and Emmy Fisher, representing the local United Way, talking about the current United Way campaign that's going on here in central Illinois. Brett Smith from the University Baptist Church will be our guest September 30, talking about campus ministry throughout the United States. And from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center on October 7th, our guest will be Shaquille Mustafa. So we're very happy to be looking forward to such interesting guests in the weeks ahead. This is a weekly program from 5 to 6 here on WILL AM, a radio service of the College of Communications, soon to have a new name, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And, of course, we're listener-supported and very grateful for the contributions that listeners make to keep these programs on the air. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. I'm the director of the University YMCA. And coming up at the Y this week is our first Know Your University program for this fall semester. On Tuesday noon, warm breezes and Hawaiian guitars, the genius of Eddie Alkiri. The son, Richard, of Eddie, will be at the Y, and he's a guitar designer and instructor. And also Scott Swartz, an archivist, will be our guests, and there'll be a very informal program talking, and you'll hear some music and see some guitars and learn about guitars in that Hawaiian tradition. This is all part of course, the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival that's at Cranford Center next weekend. Those who came to the first one last year know how wonderful it was, and the Y is happy to be part of this for this Tuesday, Know Your University. I might also add that we're cooperating with Cranert the following week as well at the Y on September 18, a week from Tuesday at noon. We'll have the performers from the Speak Theater Arts production of NWC, which are the initials for three racial slurs for three different ethnic groups represented by these actors and performers, writers. And there's at the Y, we're having a public forum about race and ethnicity and language. It does require tickets for this. The tickets are free, but we want to make sure, along with Cranert, that everyone who comes realizes we will be using words which are racial slurs, and we want people to know what they're going to be hearing when they come to this public forum. There are still tickets available, although seats are limited at the Y and Latzer Hall for this program. You get the tickets through Cranert Center for the Performing Arts. You may call them during the week, 333-6280, or email cran-tix at uiuc.edu, or simply go to the CranertCenter.com homepage. Or you can go directly to the Cranert Center ticket office. I think the tickets are all sold out for the actual performances at Cranert, although they were considering adding a third show. You might call and ask. But there are tickets still available for this public forum on September 18, Tuesday noon at the University Y, 1001 South Wright Street. Also starting this week is our first Friday Forum, part of the Citizenship Without Borders series that we're very excited to be sponsoring. Friday Forums have been at the Y for over 80 years, and they began with faculty hearing deans and presidents of the university talk about certain issues that were current and pertinent, and then the faculty meeting with students on those Friday nights. in the dorms, often for informal discussions with students. And then that developed over the years into something that's open not just to faculty, but to people in the community as well. And Professor Nick Berbulis will be our guest this Friday, September 14 at noon at the Y. Professor of Education, as a named chair at the university. He'll be talking about blogs, political activism, and new public spaces. Some of these new methods of communication that reach across international borders even, and might may completely bypass government. So that'll be our first talk in this series, Citizenship Without Borders. If you'd like to reserve a meal at our good Thai eatery, call the Y, 337-1500 during the week, or simply come and we'll find food when you get there. You may also bring your own lunch or simply come and attend the free lecture. Also, Communiversity classes start this week at the Y. Most of them are in the evening. Classes on dance, classes on spirituality, classes on food, cooking, Philippine cooking, Ghanaian cooking, classes on martial arts, photography, money matters. We have a catalog you can see online at the Y website, universityymca.org. Or you can pick them up all around town, libraries and other places, the various foundations on campus. So, inexpensive classes on all manner of fun topics. Check out Communiversity at the University of YMCA. Well, let's get back to our guest for today, Joel Schweitzer. Joel, talk a little bit about what's in the new building with its larger spaces that wasn't in the old building.
Sure. Well, one of the exciting things is that we will actually have not one but two kitchens, both of them supervised kosher kitchens. We receive our certification through the Chicago Rabbinic Council. So we've had in the past a meat kitchen. We are adding to this a dairy kitchen so that we'll be able to serve a greater variety of food. And I think it'll be an exciting addition. The dairy kitchen will serve will be served out of will serve a cafe that's right outside of the actual kitchen. It will it'll have Starbucks coffee, both regular decaf, but also fair trade available. And that coffee will actually be free to students who or anyone who comes in. So we're very excited about that, and hope that that'll generate some excitement. Actually, one of the neat things about it is the woman who made the gift to name the cafe decided rather than name it after herself, she would like us to have a contest among students to name the cafe. And so we've just launched that recently, and if anyone has a suggestion, they can certainly email it to me at joel@IlliniHillel.org. We've had a number of interesting ones, including some of the ones that have generated a smile around the office have been the Nosh Pit and Maccabeans. So the students are thinking very creatively. We've got several dozen suggestions at this point. We are awarding the student with the winning entry with a $25 Amazon.com gift certificate, and in the event that multiple people suggest the same name, we'll have a drawing among those students.
And what will the cafe serve besides the free coffee?
Well, it'll be served by the dairy kitchen, so it may serve some cold salads, some sandwiches, bagels, things like that. It'll also a very popular, not new, but a very popular feature of Hillel over the last couple of years has been our pool table. The pool table will also be in the cafe, so I think it'll be quite a nice hangout space for the students. There will be, in my mind, one of the most exciting additions to the facility is actually up on the second floor. We have a rather large rooftop deck that'll be about 1,800 to 2,000 square feet. This deck will provide an engaging hangout space for the 8 or 9 months a year that the weather permits. It'll be It'll be a great place for the holiday of Sukkot, where we have our temporary booth put up. It'll be used for our barbecues. There's actually going to be a gas line plumbed out of the building right to the grill. And most exciting, there will be speakers built into the wall. And so we'll be able to do rooftop concerts up on the deck, but also any student who maybe has an hour to kill in between classes might be able to come and plug their iPod into the input, which will be accessible on the deck, and there will be a volume control with, of course, a master volume control inside where they can't access, so that it so that our neighbors don't get upset at us. But any student will be able to go and plug in an iPod or whatever MP3 player they might have and play their own music out on the deck. So we're very excited about this too.
Now, if there are new Jewish students or parents of Jewish students listening to this and wondering how to find Hillel now during this interim when the new building's being built, I know you were at McKinley Foundation for a while, but then they started their huge building construction project as well, and you needed to move. Where are you now? Where
sure.
are your offices?
Well, if you wanted to find our offices, you would find us at 606 West Ohio. But the truth of the matter is you'll find us everywhere on campus, because we're doing, as we said earlier, our Friday night meals and services in Allen Hall. We're doing programs in the other res halls, on the quad. Our Illini PAC, our Israel Advocacy Group, has been meeting at Greg Hall. So we're spreading out in the meantime. It may only be three blocks away where we're physically located, but to many students, especially those without cars, that three blocks seems far. So we've got a very nice house we're in the old Alpha Chi Sigma house. So it's a great facility when people make it out there, but we recognize that not everyone might want to make the terrible drudge of three blocks to come over to that side of Urbana.
Now, when Jewish students who are active in YMCA programs, and there are quite a few who go on alternative spring breaks and tutor in our vis-a-vis tutoring programs in the schools and others, who are involved in Engineers Without Borders or some of the Y student programs, when I hear from these Jewish students about Hillel, one of the things that I often hear they're most excited about are Birthright Israel trips. Tell us about the trips to Israel that are available free to what, any Jewish student?
Absolutely. Birthright is a program that was started in 1999, and it's a joint partnership between a group of philanthropists who really got the project moving, the Jewish Federations of North America, and also the Israeli government. Any Jewish student who has never been on a peer group trip to Israel can be eligible for a free 10-day trip. Basically, they'll give a $250 deposit, which will be refunded to them at the end of the trip, or if they pull out by the deadline, they can also get that refunded. And we've taken students for the last 7 years. We've taken over 500 students total.
Wow.
And I've had the pleasure of staffing a couple of the trips here from Illinois, but also in my previous Hillel position. So I've gone personally on about five or six of these experiences as well. And there's nothing like seeing Israel for the first time again through the eyes of the students who are just experiencing it. It's truly amazing. And they can register for our trip by going to www.shorashim.org and registering for the Chicago Community Trip. That'll be a campus-based trip, so they'll go with other students from the U of I. And one of the things that makes the Shorashim Birthright trip so unique is that they will actually travel the entire 10 days with Israeli peers. So They'll have this whole experience with Israelis that are in the same stage of life as our students, and it really adds to the impact of the trip tremendously. In fact, the students and the Israeli peers usually stay in touch. One of the Israelis from the last trip that I staffed actually was just here a few days ago, and so it was neat to see that excitement generated among the alumni of that trip about their friend coming to Champaign.
Are there many Jewish students here at the University of Illinois from Israel?
There are. There's a sizable. I couldn't even begin to hazard a guess. There's also a significant Israeli community in Champaign in general. Amdocs has a plant that I know employs a number of Israelis, and so in addition to the students, there's a nice population here. In fact, they're very welcoming. When Rabbi Pransky and his wife were set to arrive, it actually came together very last minute. We didn't think they'd be able to make it for quite some time. They have a small child who's a little over a year old. So I had the administrator of the email listserv that goes out to the Israeli community send a request for cribs, high chairs, things like that. We were inundated with so many things for the Pransky's child that we actually had to turn a couple of things down. And it was really heartwarming to see the community really come together to help support newcomers to the community. And I know that's a common story.
Let's talk a little bit about Hillel experiences over time and now with discrimination, hostility from others in this community or people passing through. How much difficulty has there been for Hillel, for Jewish students, for Jews in Champaign-Urbana as a minority religion?
Well, I think Champaign-Urbana has been a fertile ground for the Jewish community. And yes, sometimes the visibility comes at the price of being available to anti-Semites who might be around. But I think by and large, when you think about the fact that the entire Hillel movement was started right here, I think that's more of an indication of how this community feels about Jews rather than the scattered incident that might happen here or there. I truly believe that.
What kind of systematic or institutional racism still exists? I know on this campus, in this community, we don't have very many blue laws, but the parking meters are still free on Sunday, but not on Saturday, for example.
I got a ticket a couple of weeks ago. I know. I think there are always professors that are still learning about when an appropriate time for a Jewish student to legitimately ask off for a holiday might be. And in fact, I'll tell you, in addition to getting questions for students from professors about students missing classes, I've gotten questions from Jewish professors that weren't quite sure. Would an observant student really need to miss for Sukkot, for example? Which,
sure.
Yes, the answer is, and I think it's a great opportunity to educate people, and I think in general people want to know. They don't want to be, even when you can point to that to an incident and say, well, that's institutional racism. I don't think it's purposeful institutional racism, and I think if you have the opportunity to sit down and speak with someone that one-on-one, that usually they want to know, and they don't want to be doing something that minimizes or threatens your identity.
Are there things you would like changed, such as? Christians can park by their churches free on Sunday mornings, but Jews can't Friday night at synagogue. I mean, does that bother anybody?
It's not an issue that I personally has a great deal of resonance with me, and I haven't heard a lot of clamoring on it. On the other hand, what I hear about is the parking garages that are adjacent to Hillel after 5 o'clock on during daylight savings time, and after 4 o'clock the rest of the year are open to the
anyone.
Sure. And so, you know, on the contrary, I tell people to park there, and they, you know, maybe we're just fortunate to have those garages nearby, but no, it's not been an issue for us.
Those garages also help many churches and the mosque and the Y and people who come to Y events. I know in the evenings and on weekends, yeah. It's very helpful.
Yeah, and I have to say the entire community has really, you know, we've had some serious transitions in the last year. First from our permanent location into a temporary place, and the McKinley Foundation was very warm, welcoming, and open to us at that time. And then now from the Presby House operated by McKinley, which of course has been since bulldozed to our new location in Urbana, we found the university very accommodating to work with us to make sure that our Shabbat observance can continue in a way that's meaningful to students.
We're down to about our last 7 or 8 minutes here on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Joel Schweitzer, director of the Hillel Foundation on campus for Jewish students and others in the community. If you have a question or comment, do give us a call, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Joel, you mentioned the fact that students can plug in MP3 players and iPods and so forth in certain places in the new building. What else have you done for the new technological renaissance?
Well, it will be Wi-Fi throughout, although that's also not new. That's something we've done for a couple of years now. There will be in all of the multipurpose rooms, there will be the ability to plug in from our AV cart and again get either play a DVD or or something off a computer or directly from the satellite onto a projection screen. The downstairs one, as I mentioned, has a 20-foot screen. Upstairs has screens in two different locations depending on how you want to orient the room that are also sizable. And then in the student lounge, there will be a large plasma LCD screen, surround sound. All of these spaces will have surround sound available. I think it'll be an engaging place for students to watch movies, to play video games, to do things to unwind.
When you were talking earlier about the estate of Margie and Lewis Cohen, who made the major gift to build this new building. How did you get that to happen?
Well, again, it comes back to our relationship with the Jewish Federation of Metropolitan Chicago. And because we are part of the Federation system, we are, Steve Nassiter, who's the president of the Federation, will carry around a list of capital projects when he meets with prospective donors. So we were fortunate enough that he had our building on the list when he met with the Cohen family, and of all the projects that they could potentially be involved with, ours was the one that was most exciting to them. And I do want to mention that it's, you know, one of the neat things about raising the money for this project has been identifying new people who haven't been involved with Hillel before, but also at the same time seeing the investment of the local community. And in fact, we have about a year ago, the Libman Company offered a matching challenge grant to where any gift that's made, they're really excited about encouraging the Jewish community outside of Chicago to invest in this project and to take ownership in this project. And so they have made available up to $250,000 to be leveraged dollar-for-dollar matches for anyone from outside of the metropolitan Chicago area who makes a gift to this project. And we've been fortunate enough to raise to leverage nearly $100,000 of those matching funds already, and we're still working very hard to do it. And if there's anyone out there listening who would like to be a part of that, they can reach me at joel@IlliniHillel.org.
And how much farther do you have to go for your campaign to raise the money for this building that's in process that you sort of are building on faith, I guess.
Sure. Well, we have the money for bricks, mortar, furniture, okay. and that. So what we're raising now is the money to make sure that we can really make that building sing and be full of energy and hopefully continue to have power to it. because we do, you know, it's very easy for people to get excited about bricks and mortar. It's not so easy to get people excited about turning the lights on, and this endowment will be critical in making sure that we can do that.
How green is the building? How environmentally friendly?
It's certainly going to be more energy efficient than the old one. We would have you know, it would have been a great thing if we had been able to plan on it being a true green building, or maybe even have a green roof, which is something many people have mentioned. The unfortunate piece is that we only budgeted for what we could reasonably expect to raise. In fact, one of the early ideas along similar lines was there were a number of people who were interested in having the building have some kind of housing component to it, and the way that this campaign is running, we're not looking to carry a mortgage. We're not looking to finance it. We're looking to raise the money, build the project, build the endowment. And in all reality, based on what's been raised for other Hillels in this state, we didn't think it was reasonable to think that we could raise $14-15 million for a building with housing attached to it. So we stuck with what we thought we could reasonably do.
Our guest on Keeping the Faith this afternoon has been Joel Schweitzer, who's the executive director of the Hillel Foundation at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We've been talking about their efforts to re-engineer Hillel for the 21st century, which includes a $8.6 million campaign to build a brand new building and set up an endowment to fund continued programs at Hillel, which has been on this campus since 1923, the very first Hillel Foundation anywhere, and now it's spread all over the country and around the world in various places. So we're delighted to hear about this step in this religious foundation's work at this time. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the director of the University Y and the usual host for this program. I'll be interviewing next week Rafe Melhado and Jessica Cavanaugh about their years' experience recently in Israel, involved in Jewish studies. And then September 23rd, we'll be hearing about United Way plans. September 30, about campus ministry, mainly Christian, throughout the U.S., from University Baptist pastor Brett Smith. Dr. Smith has been studying that recently. On October 7th, from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, our guest will be Shakil Mustafa. Coming up at the Y this week, the First Friday Forum with Professor Nick Berboulis, Citizenship Without Borders, blogs, political activism, and new public spaces. And at Know Your University at the noon on Tuesday, the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival, Warm Breezes and Hawaiian Guitars. We'll be learning about that Tuesday noon at the YMCA. And community classes start at the Y this week. To learn, go to our website, universityymca.org, and click on Community for these non-credit, very inexpensive, but fun classes about all manner of things. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
It's been 50 years since Jack Kerouac's groundbreaking novel On the Road was published, but there's still a lot we can learn from the book. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, on To the Best of Our Knowledge, John Leland on the lessons of On the Road. and why Kerouac still matters. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Reassessing the surge in Iraq, General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker testify before House and Senate committees. NPR will provide a summary of the proceedings each night. Join us for highlights of the testimony and thorough analysis from NPR News Monday and Tuesday at 6 p.m. here on AM 580. And hear the entire hearings on our website at WILL.UIUC.edu. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s and light northeast winds. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high in the lower 80s and light northeast winds. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, the low in the mid-50s with north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tuesday, partly sunny with a high in the mid-70s and northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.